Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Today on episode 195, Coach Tim Polasek, the new offensive coordinator for the Wyoming Cowboys, recent offensive line coach for the Iowa Hawkeyes, joins us. He talks about a whole bunch of topics. This past summer, the 2020 season, COVID, coaching, Tristan Wirfs, you name it, all of it in this podcast. Let's sit back, relax, and have a day. Let's go.
Welcome back, Wash Up Walk-Ons fans. Episode 195 of the podcast. And today, I'm hoping that this is one of the more electric podcasts that we've brought to you guys, because the guest we have today is one of the new, most humbling times for this podcast, because we finally got somebody truly fucking important to come talk to us about the time that he spent with the program we love, the time we spent together in the program that we love. This guy is an energizer bunny for a football program, and it is absolutely no surprise that he's worked his way up from just part of the staff to now running his own show pretty much. Would like to welcome the former offensive line coach and the current offensive coordinator of the Wyoming Broncos?
Cowboys.
Coach Tim Polasek.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. I'm fired up too. I wish I was around you guys for longer than just, was it 1 year with everybody?
1 year.
17. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And the interesting thing about 17 for me was, you know, at the time, just wanting to stay within the confines and the structure of the offensive line, the system that Coach Ferentz had, I was just really doing the best I could to get to know the guys and trying to learn and, you know, develop the offensive line the best I could. So I didn't get a real chance to be totally integrated with your guys' class. It was a fun group. You know, it was a great time. And I'm excited to talk a little bit of Hawkeyes football. I promised Coach Bull, I said, you know, I got this one more thing I want to do for these guys, you know, with Hawkeye football. And then we'll get moving forward here on Cowboy.
Absolutely.
Cowboy spring ball.
That's probably a good idea. You don't want to spend too much time on us.
We're the last stop, huh?
Yeah, no doubt.
You mentioned, and I want to get right into it because it's one of the big topics. It is unfortunate that we only had 1 year together. When you walked into the program, I, as a specialist, you know, long snappers, kickers, we were always, you know, putzing around, getting in the way of O-line drills, running back drills.
Right.
The first thing that I noticed was when you came in was like Drake said, your energy. It is off the walls. Almost bonkers sometimes. Where does that come from, Coach? I mean, you are absolute go, go, go all the time.
I think first and foremost, I don't want to get like cliche-ish with you guys. I want to be real. For me, it's just like we're real fortunate to get to coach football. And then like you go out there and to me, like 100% of the guys are good guys and you give them a clean slate and they deserve your best shot. I mean, that's where it really truly comes from. And then on top of it, I guess I would just simply say that's like what I expect out of first and foremost, the good players, like within your position group. But like, if you can get that kind of return energy, all of a sudden you got a group and you got an environment where everybody's learning and having fun doing it. And that's kind of where it comes from. To me, football is tough. Football sucks. 353 days a year or 51 days a year. And then you get to party 12 times. That's it. Yep. And then like, it's a physical game. There's injuries. And so like, my approach has always been like, well, you know, how can we make this not only, you know, tough, but like enjoyable. And so that's always been my approach. You know, when we cross the stripe, my position group and my units, I want them jogging. We want to be moving, because I really do think big body language is coachable. You know, when a guy has big body language, he's kind of telling you, hey, coach me. And then like, when that's returned with the same amount of energy and passion daily, I think you start to cultivate that trust. And I'm 41, so I'm still a young guy in my mind, but I've never showed up on that field and not given it my best.
Young as fuck still, coach.
Right.
Yeah, I was about to say, you were definitely dripping sweat just as much as some of your offensive linemen.
No doubt. No doubt. Coach started yelling, Charlie. You know, then you know, like the anxiety would go up. But I don't like saying the word proud. Like, I've never told the guys at Iowa or anybody that I've coached probably since 2011 that I was proud of them. I've always told them, hey, I'm excited for the next time you get the opportunity to do it. Because I think when you use that word proud, you're kind of taking the ownership of their actions away from them. And I think it's really interesting to get in there and really, really be vested. Not only in them being the best they can be as a football player, but then like, how good can the relationship be, you know, post career? Right. You know, do you get a wedding invitation? You know, does a guy call you from the Super Bowl, you know, prior to the parade? Does he call you on a FaceTime? That stuff is cool. And that's when you know you're making a difference.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Can you speak a little bit more to that? Like, I think it, that coaching has come a long way, maybe since like we started playing in high school, that it's become a lot more about language, culture, connection with the players, and has been about like X's and O's, schemes and technique. Is that accurate, or has that always been
the way? Here's where I think that's really cool. Like, we could probably spend an hour on that topic, and I'm not in a hurry today. So,
oh, we love that.
You know, the same guys that got in this business for all the right reasons. Okay. The guys in that 55 year range to 65 year range. Okay. So we're talking about the Iowa program in a lot of ways, right? There's a lot of important leaders that are in that age group. Those same guys that got in the business for all the right reasons, they got paid $30,000, not $440,000 to coach the O-line. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because they wanted to truly mentor and develop and, you know, go out there and demand a certain level of effort and respect, are the same kind of guys that are kind of getting forced out of the business right now, which is really ironic. It's ass backwards. It's totally ass backwards. Mm-hmm. You know, now there's a group of guys, younger guys, that like, holy cow, recruiting, and that's its own industry. And then the amount of money us coaches get paid, you know, like, you really gotta wonder sometimes, why do people do it, what they do? Like, I'm really curious. One thing, I really believe in that offensive line group, Iowa, and that we were able to recruit in the 21 class. They had major offers, a lot of those kids. Mm-hmm. And we were, as a group, right, Tyler Barnes, myself, Coach Ferentz, and then the area recruiter, you know, whether it was Seth or Kelton Copeland, on those guys, just in my position group. We really dug on those guys, and we found out they love football. You know, you can't like recruiting more than you like ball or practice or lifting weights or hanging out and partying with your friends, whatever that might be. Those things all have to be far more important than the attention you're getting as an individual. So kind of to get back to your question, you know, about connection and connectivity and how you speak to guys. Look what the Creighton coach is going through. Yeah. I don't know that guy personally, but I know of him through North Dakota State and then the people at, like, this guy's supposed to be a tremendous guy. Like, I think it was just a mistake.
Yeah.
And who knows? He might lose his job over this. And so how you speak to people and how you cultivate communication in your room is very important. And I really come back to this. I said this in my presser the other day. Number one thing we have to do is get to know these guys on offense, the guys that we're working with. Because, you know, Tyler, you as a player might be okay with ass-chewing, a really demanding coach, really demanding the standards on the field. And then you might get a guy over here, you know, Johnny might not like that. You got to talk to him on a personal level. Or you got to be able to grab him at dinner and say, hey, listen, that shit wasn't good enough. But he responds because it's one-on-one. You know, so I think the everything is just so known with social media. I mean, we wouldn't have been doing this 5 years ago, a podcast.
Nope.
And so that part of it's interesting to me how much I'll share this story with you guys. We're at Nebraska and we're getting all over them. Was it 17 or 18 that we played over there?
It was 17.
It was every fucking year that we got after them. There wasn't a single year.
But the scores ended up tight, right? Like, and then they ended up being tight games and like, what are we doing? And I remember getting the old line over there and like, hey, let's not mess around with these guys. And then I used some language. My guys were fired up, but I was trying to send a message. Let's bury these guys. We got them right where we want them. Mm-hmm. And somebody 5 feet away is holding their phone.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, if this guy posts this on Twitter, I'm going to be in Barter's office. And this is a problem.
Yeah.
Well, why should I, as a football coach in my arena, have to worry about a fan holding a video camera? But Coach Ferentz talks about it all the time. You're always on tape.
Yep.
Someone's always.
I was just about to ask you a question about that, Coach. So it has to do a little bit with how us three accepted coaching and enjoyed being coached, how that fits with your coaching style, and how maybe the coming generations aren't built to be coached the same way. And like you were talking about how coaches now make a whole lot more money and the industry of football is enormous and there's tens of millions of dollars on the line when teams step over the line. And a lot of people's families' livelihood are riding on the shoulders of the performance of these kids. Like, do you believe this? I know your answer is going to be yes, but I want you to explain it to like the parents and the kids who listen to this podcast. How the football field and the walls within a football complex have to be a sacred place where you drop your fucking ego and drop your feelings and allow the people who want the best for you to force the best out of you while you're doing the forcing, you know, working as hard as you can. Because if you just like drop the ego and allow yourself to be coached by some of the best minds in the game, everybody's going to get better. You're going to get more wins. Everybody's going to be happy. So I just kind of want you to touch on that from a coach's perspective.
Yeah. You know, that's amazing. That's a really good question. It's insightful. I think you hit on some points that I would also expand upon it, but it all starts in the recruiting process. And what we were trying to do at Iowa, what we tried to do at North Dakota State and what we'll do, you know, at Wyoming with Coach Bowles' leadership, is, you know, like the vetting process. Like if kids don't say things like, man, I can't wait to get to know my teammates. I can't wait to learn from Tyler Linderbaum. Okay. And that's just one example, but Mislinski, he kept saying that, you know, I can't wait to be mentored by a really good player. I can't wait to be coached. I have so much more to learn and I have so much more to do. Okay. If kids aren't saying those kind of things, you got to really start to ask yourself now, in a program like Iowa, Wyoming, North Dakota State, Northern Illinois, those are the only places I can comment on. Because we are going to challenge them. We're going to demand certain things. And when you get a guy that is into how many stars he is, how many times he won one-on-one pass rush reps, how many catches, how many touchdowns rushing.
How many Twitter followers? That's the one that always gets
me. How many Twitter? Like, okay, so there's some red flags, right? But let's just say we all say, man, that guy is talented enough. There's still enough positives there to work with him. Okay, when we bring that guy into the building, that process of developing a relationship has to be at the forefront. I mean, I don't care who they are. They got to know you care about them. Kids don't care about how much you know until they know how much you care. Some coaches do a great job. Some coaches do a good job, but it takes longer. The problem with this whole conversation, what we're in right now, our business as coaches, kids don't understand this and parents don't understand this. We're in a race to maturity. Yep. You don't have much time to be 18 and be a true freshman if you're talented. Man, we need you to be a player. LeVar Woods needs you on special teams this year right now.
Yep.
And Like that's where it gets to be hairy.
I'm getting I'm getting fired up right now. Holy shit. I want to play football again. God damn it. Ha ha.
But that's where it gets hairy, because now a kid gets, you know, you get one individual that feels like he's being attacked as a person. And really, we're just trying to win a damn game. Like, okay, what's going to happen next? And we all know how that can go based on the last year.
Yeah.
And so that's always the challenge, is can you really push a guy? You know, Christian Welch, he's from my hometown. I was shocked that he played as a true freshman. We recruited the heck out of him. It would have helped him to be with the team one more year and all that. It was a great decision because he's big, strong, physical, he's smart, he can run, he cares about his team, so it made sense, right? But I just thought the football knowledge he had, I thought it would be tough for him to play as a freshman, and he did it. But he was probably mature enough and could handle it, where you get some of these guys that aren't necessarily built that way, you got to be careful of throwing them out there because of how you got to coach them to win a game. Yeah. And so I'd come back to like that race to maturity and getting people and parents to understand, man, guys, this isn't Animal House. And this is 340, 330 days a year that you're going to have to punch the clock and come to work to have the opportunity to compete and the opportunity to play, because there is no guarantees. And then the next spring, we're going out there to replace your ass.
Yeah.
In recruiting.
That's the thing that, man, boy. I mean, we could do this for hours, man.
Right, but I tell my guys, hey, listen, I told the O-line, and get Shooter and get Linderbaum on there and ask them stories after they're done a year from now. It was kind of a joke. They knew I was dead serious. I'd say, guys, hey, let's go have a hell of a spring game or a spring practice. And tomorrow I leave, and I'm going to replace everybody. Because that's my job. That's the promise I made your parents, mm-hmm. that I would have. We would have a competitive culture. I got to go recruit. Got to go do it again.
That was the Casey Kreider. You probably don't know him. You may have met him once or twice in the building when he came back. I walked in the door as a dumbass 18-year-old, like you're talking about, needed to mature quickly because Casey was in his senior year and I was going to be the guy the next year. And one of the first things he told me that has stuck with me to this day was, you know, next year they're going to have another you. They're replacing you already and you're not even in the spot yet. And that was a huge thing for me to realize. They care about me, but in the end, they don't care about me. They care about, you know, making sure we have a guy who can get the job done. And then as long as I'm a part of the team, then they care about me and my feelings. And it helped me mature. And that race to maturity quote, that's really, really good. You talked about the 350 days a year. And one of my notes was the coaching lifestyle and just the, especially at Iowa, Drake, Kevin, and I, we all saw Coach Reed, a couple other coaches, literally sleep in the complex a few times because of the job requirements and what it takes to compete at a Division I level. Talk about that lifestyle and how absurd it is. Like to an extent, it's unhealthy in some ways. What are your thoughts on that and what gets you through those 16, 18, 20-hour days?
Yeah, I think, number one, I think, you know, technology has, I will say this, it's interesting because you're probably commenting on things from 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, 5 years ago.
Yeah, you know, but technology has really allowed us to be more efficient. We really, it's just the paranoia of wanting to put you guys as players in the best position possible to be successful. For me, that's where it starts. And then I would also say just that competitive spirit, man, I want to go out there and beat Boise State. You know, I want to beat Ohio State, you know, at 7 o'clock kickoff and it's on NBC or Fox. And like, this is a big deal. People are watching our product, you know? And so it kind of just comes back to, what are you willing to do in the dark? You know, what are you willing to do when nobody's watching? Because your road work, right? All that work that you guys put in under the lights, you can't hide from it. You just can't. And so sometimes I think as coaches, as far as the work goes, especially during the year, it just kind of comes from a paranoia of not being prepared or turning over every stone. Now, like for me, and I've always told this, I've been fortunate to interview for a couple head coaching jobs. And I always said this quote, you know, like when we're working, we're going to work. We're going to be really efficient. We're going to be into it. We're going to have a great sense of urgency. We're going to have tasks. We're going to knock them down. But when we're off, we're off. We want to do that as good as we can as well. And the one thing I appreciated about Iowa in Coach Ferentz is that he really was conscious of that. You know, like, so with our off time, when you guys wouldn't necessarily, you know, July, for instance, we weren't asked to come in unless we really wanted to for skills and drills. You know, Coach really allowed us to kind of be ourselves in that month. Right? Yeah. And so I like the grind, quote unquote. I don't like talking about the grind because then you're just talking about it. Yep. Like, it was so funny during quarantine. All of a sudden, like, everybody wanted to become a clinic guru. And all I'm doing is sitting in the offensive line room every February through March, inviting my buddies, inviting people in, come see how we're doing it, right? Like, I was open to doing that. And then as soon as quarantine hit, I mean, people had their setups and their cameras and Twitter ready for the grind, man. You know, going to grind it out. Well, you're grinding it out on you. It was the easiest, physically and mentally, it was the easiest 4 months. I've never had that much time off in my life.
Right.
I've never been that inactive in my life. Like, I just, where do we talk? Grind. I'll show you the grind. Come to practice. We'll show you grind.
Me and Tyler Barnes about to go grind out at the golf course.
Right.
How's Tyler feel about losing his golf buddy? I heard he had a pretty good handicap.
Yeah, you know what? Gotten real close with Tyler. Really respect the job he does. He's totally driving that recruiting. And you guys have noticed over the last 2 or 3 years, I mean, the recruiting has really been done at a high level, you know, and you miss on some guys. There's no way not to. But, yeah, Tyler and his wife, Jo, we've gotten really close. Jill and myself, my wife, those are the friendships that are hard to – just like it's hard to leave Tyler Linderbaum and Shooter and Cody Ince and Jack Plum and those guys you recruited. But, you know, there's always going to be those relationships. You just – hopefully they're strong enough that, you know, you're able to maybe go on a golf trip in the summer or something.
Yeah,
he's a good dude. He's a better over the 4 years. He got me more times than I got him. So wow. We'll let him keep that crown. But he was a fun. He's fun to play with.
You talk about leaving that relationship with the staff members, leaving your current players, leaving the guys who you just busted your ass on the recruiting trail for. You talk about the Mislinski kid, other kids that you recruited. What are those conversations like when you have to sit down and have that tough conversation? Hey, you know, I'm thinking about moving on, taking a bigger step up. What are those have to be weird, right?
Yeah. And I really appreciate Coach Ferentz. He allows us coaches to get with the guys. You know, it happens so fast. I mean, you know, like, okay, I take the job, whether it's on the phone, the contract's going to the agent, da 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 da, all this stuff, right? Okay, then you're signing in your e-doc signing, and then you got to get there, you got to start working. And so your mind, I mean, there's only one way to do it, right? Like, your mind is on the next thing. I really struggled. I'll just share this with you guys. I struggled talking with those guys. It was hard. It's just because that group is starting to be player driven. Like, I think they go out there and practice on their own. Mm-hmm. Because we're going, right? Like, they started to understand the standard. But it was really difficult to look David Koff in the eyes in that meeting room and Connor Colby, because they had came early. You know, and they'd already been starting to train. They needed me there.
Yep.
They needed somebody there. And I know Coach and Brian have done a good job with those guys, and Ray has done a good job. But those guys are kids. You know, and they came to school early to try to learn the craft, you know, learn the offense. And then all of a sudden the guy that recruited him for 2 years is leaving. And so I can't even put words to it. It's really hard. It's the really crappy part of the business.
Yep.
You know, just the fact that we don't get what I told, I'll share this. What I told the group, guys, if I could hit pause, I would do it. If I could freeze when these opportunities were going to come up and show up, I would hit pause because I want to coach you guys. But we don't get as coaches the opportunity to say, hey, when these opportunities come and or when they don't come. I left 27 seniors to go to Northern Illinois in 2013, and those kids were unbelievable. I mean, I think 6 or 7 of them played in the league at North Dakota State, and they won their third straight national. We knew we were winning the national title. I think that team was rated one of the top 100 teams of all time. And so I had to do it there. And then I had to do it again at Iowa here. So it's just really hard. It's really hard because the kids matter to me. Yep. The relationships with the players and seeing their growth and them win the race to maturity. And then all of a sudden you're going to leave them. That's really difficult. But they're in good hands at Iowa with that offensive line.
There's so much. Yeah. You
can you talk about coming to Iowa? Did you have any relationship or prior experience with Coach Ferentz or any of the coaches on the staff?
You know, I've shared this story a lot with coaches, you know, that have asked, like, how in the hell did that happen? You know, I really didn't. I got to know Seth Wallace. On the road. And what was interesting, Seth didn't tell me till years later, probably 18 or 19. But Seth said, you know, Tim, one of the reasons why you got a shot at this job was I was so tired of chasing you around in Wisconsin. Like, if I found out who you were recruiting, we could get on some good players. Well, you know, the kind of the layer behind that people don't know is I would spend 3-4 weeks in Wisconsin recruiting, you know, so we would have the time to really find these gems, you know, guys that were not ranked by rivals and so forth. Well, what that did was I think that gave Seth Wallace an opportunity to talk to some high school coaches in the state. And, you know, him having good relationships there, me knowing most people there, that kind of started this thing. And then I don't like talking about this, but obviously the 16 game, you know, NDSU coming to Iowa City and
that one sucked.
That was tough. Well, that was tough.
It sucked for me for 4 years too, having to relive it as a Hawkeye. But, you know, so we did a good job. And then I think it was Phil Parker, you know, saying, man, these guys are hard to prepare for. They're well coached. And I think Coach Ferentz probably just maybe kept hearing this name. And then Brian and I actually were trying to form a committee. We had one game where we got called for like 8 illegal cut blocks. In 16. So before any jobs were open, me and Brian had already started talking, Brian and I, about forming a committee of guys that wanted to hold on to football, you know, blocking and tackling.
Rock on that
one. Yeah. In fullbacks, right?
In time. Hey, while you're at it, the wedge needs to be saved on kickoff return.
Right. So I think that helped. And then slowly but surely, it just kept gaining traction. And then everybody, you know, I don't know if people know this, but Coach Ferentz's mentor was a running back guy by heart. You know, that's kind of where he started, Joe Moore, right?
Yep.
And, you know, he became an O-line coach. So I think Coach Ferentz, in his confidence, in his insight, in intelligence, the system, I just think it all worked out that none of that was going to change. So you had to try to bring a guy in that could learn it. Relate well with the kids, recruit, and then let's go. I mean, one of the things that I really valued was his patience in letting us get it to where it needed to be. And I think that kind of showed this year in 2020. I thought the guys really did a good job of blocking people. But that's kind of how that all went down. I mean, yeah. I'm sure there were multiple phone calls on their end to all sorts of people in support of me, but you know, you go down there and then you're in a 16-hour interview.
Yeah. I've heard those interviews are brutal. They just put you in front of a whiteboard and say, go at it, right?
Yeah, they've got a unique process I'm not comfortable sharing because I don't want it to get out there. Yeah. For myself and Coach Copeland, Derek Foster, you know, that group of guys that interviewed back in 17, that February, that was a meat grinder. And I can tell you, there was some really, really well thought out questions, plan, some activities. It's what I've adopted if I ever do become a head coach or have the ability to interview anybody. It's that's the process I'll use. It was really good.
Yeah. Coach.
I was going to follow up with, I was just curious. The reason I asked that question is, KF has this reputation of rarely working outside of his network of guys he knows and trusts or, I've coached, GA'd with him whatsoever. But to hire a quote-unquote outsider to take the room of offensive line, which he kind of regards as, you know, his that's his home, that's his passion, is the offensive line. I just thought that was really interesting at the time. But, no, you took it, you ran with it, and I think every guy I've talked to says he loved playing for you.
Well, I think the one thing I'll add for that, they had a real concise plan. Coach Ferentz, Brian, and Phil, and Seth, you know, Coach O'Keefe, they had a real concise plan of what kind of guy they were looking for. And I just, like, I would stand on the table, even with the last year of some of the stuff that's going on, like, I think that building, in my opinion, is full of really good people right now. And everybody that has the interests of the program, the guys sitting next to them in the meeting rooms, and then the players. I think that was really at the forefront for those guys. Not necessarily, well, this guy's never coached O-line before. I mean, it's just, you know, it's football. And, you know, I mean, guys can learn and grow. It's really the culture that matters the most.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The full circle question is perfect here. Like Kevin said, they give you the keys to, you know, the biggest name brand position that Iowa has, right? Going back to guys like Robert Gallery, Belaga, Reef, and they give you the keys. And a lot of people on the outside, they think about the player's performance, the team's performance, right? Do we win ball games, this and that? But as a coach, like, you're in your own career, right? You're trying to be great. You're trying to be the best you. And now you get you literally get the keys to drive the offensive line for the Iowa Hawkeyes. And that's a big fucking deal. And Brian Ferentz, coach's son, just leaves the position to take a different position. A lot of pressure, some could say. And as you mentioned, going all the way back to, I got it up here on the computer screen, Wisconsin Stevens Point, you coached quarterbacks, wide receivers, tight ends, D-backs, running backs, tight ends, fullbacks, special teams, but you hadn't hit the offensive line yet. What was that like taking over in that role?
Well, it was God, you guys know this. It's like, no matter what, you're always going to look at those big games, right? And the feeling of being uncomfortable, like, how is this going to go? Like, there's a chance we could get rolled up here. But yeah, ultimately, you got to keep coming back to, like, the preparation and the belief that, no, we can do this. And so for me, it was, like, euphoric. Like, I love that feeling of – I didn't feel pressure. I felt the sense of
challenge,
urgency to have to learn, and the challenge. Like, that's what it's all about. I've always kind of told guys, like, you know what? Like, in order to be great, you got to go do it. Like, you got to go do something that's going to cause you to have to work a little bit longer, have to dig a little bit harder. I mean, this quarterback thing that I'm doing now, I haven't done that for a while, but it's been just awesome getting on, like, 10 or 12. How many guys would pick the phone up? And I've been on 10 or 12 Zoom calls with quarterback coaches just saying, teach me like a ninth grader. And it's just been unbelievable. And so that was my key driving baseline that I was going to use to be successful. But then to throw in there, it's a top 5 to 10 position coaching job across the country, you know, as far as being regarded.
Absolutely.
Iowa offensive line, you know, LSU defensive backs, you know, throw in whatever you want to throw in across the country, but Iowa O-line is up there. Right. And so just that feeling of knowing the standard is high, the production's been high, not necessarily always with yards, but with the NFL draft picks and how we block people, you know, that was another deal that drove me. And I was hungry for it. I told the coaching staff, which maybe that was even harder than talking to the kids, but I said, guys, the number one reason I'm leaving to go to Wyoming is because I want to be uncomfortable again. It's my time to want to lead again. I want to.
General managers ask questions to find the right players. Like, do they have ice in their veins? When you're hiring, you can use Indeed assessments to make sure you find the right candidates with the skills you need. Don't just hope your perfect candidate will find you. Indeed's hiring tools help you cut through the noise to hire faster and smarter. In fact, Indeed Instant Match provides a list of quality candidates whose resumes are on Indeed the moment you post a sponsored job. And with Indeed assessments, choose from 135 skills tests to help make sure you're finding applications from people with skills you need. Get started right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through September 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
Be a leader of a staff, of an offensive unit, but I really crave that feeling of challenge, of uncomfortable, you know, sensations or whatever you want to call it.
Competition almost.
Yeah, that's right. That's the number one reason why I got into coaching is I never wanted to leave this kind of competitive field. Like, you can't play softball or shoot darts on a Friday or play in a pool league.
Nope.
Or play hockey with some – you can't play noon-hour basketball and get the sensation of watching you guys go out there and get it done. And it's rewarding for coaches to know, hey, I helped those guys go get that win.
Yeah. Drake's – he's into jiu-jitsu now. I like CrossFit. Kevin tries to kill himself with powerlifting, and I don't think any of those three things – even come close to comparing to what it feels like to grind.
Well, you just try to fill the hole somehow, but it never does quite ever bring back what you felt during Big Ten football. That's for damn sure.
Yeah. You walk in 2017 and in walks with you a guy named Tristan Wirfs. And I mean, this kid who is still a kid yet now a Super Bowl champion and already maybe one of the best offensive linemen in the National Football League. What was it about him that is special all the way back to walking in as a high schooler? And what was it like to coach him?
You know, I like talking about Tristan, but the one thing that's interesting about it is like the football aside, we'll be closer 2-3 years from now than we were then. Just the physical specimen that he is, you know, all these other guys, Jack Plum, Mason Richmond, you know, Tyler Linderbaum, they all had to put weight on it. They all had to get stronger and bigger. So you immediately were coaching this guy, but like, I'll come back to KF. You know, I remember him talking to me, Tim, get this kid to have his hands up in front of him and then don't overcoach him. Don't F him up, because he just had this innate ability to get in front of people and stop them in the run game. And then obviously, you know, get on people and move them in the run game. With Tristan, it was always one of those things that you were trying to always get all that weight room stuff, all that explosion and ability to run. You were always trying to get a little bit more out of him in the run game. But like, I'm watching the tape right now, 17 through 20, to do our installation and some of the things that we're going to carry over. Mm-hmm. This guy was a dominant force in the run game. It's just like you didn't ever want to put limitations on him. And I, like, he's still a kid. He's still maturing as a football player. But I guess the part that I like the most about Tristan is his ability to relate with so many different guys. He's totally comfortable in his own skin, being a small town Iowa guy and embracing that. And embracing that culture, you know, he knows how to have a good time.
Yeah, he does.
But he's a wonderful teammate. And I think friendships really matter to this guy and staying connected to the people. This year, I can't remember what week it was, guys. I was able to get him and me. Oh, he just bought his house and we were on a FaceTime and he's showing me around. I said, Tristan, I just can't stop thinking about Coach Ferentz. I said, let me try to add him on the call. And the first time it didn't go through, Coach didn't pick up the face call or the FaceTime. And then Coach called us back. And that was like one of the coolest 10 minutes that I've had with Coach and another player. Like,
damn,
just, you know, right, just off the record. And Tristan was so proud to be walking around his house and showing the car he bought for his mom for Christmas. And it was in his garage. And, you know, just listening to him and Coach, I kind of got off the call, but it was still on. That was really neat. But that's Tristan Wirfs to me. Like, he really does have a big heart. He really values Mount Vernon. He really values his family. I mean, he would fight his ass off for his mom. And that's just the kind of kid he is.
He's amazing. It was so cool to watch him win a Super Bowl, block for Tom Brady. Pretty unbelievable just season to walk into as a rookie. The three teams who passed on him and took a different alignment, they're dumb as hell. That's another story. Apart from him, you mentioned Linderbaum a couple times. He's been extremely impressive the last couple years. You also got to coach James Daniels. So, I mean, you've had a few names here, which are, again, continuing that tradition. What is it about KF and that O-line spot with him and Brian? Why is it special? Where is there a secret sauce, or they just work harder at it?
No, there's a secret sauce.
Okay.
The kids come into the program from day one, right? The emphasis is put on improving And then it's the emphasis is improving on the how. All right. I remember coach saying, Tim, just learn these drills. You'll figure out the how. You know more football than all of us or something like to that extent. I'm like, coach, I'm not so sure on that. And like in my heart, I was so worried about the guys knowing what to do, because that's the first way as a coach.
Right.
You look bad, right? A guy goes the wrong way, doesn't block the right guy. And so ultimately that belief in the basics and knowing how to fit your pad on somebody and get your hands inside to be able to control them with horizontal leverage, you know, clearly defining what vertical leverage and pad level looks like. And then ultimately, you know, that running through your contact and running off the ball and being attacking is so ingrained in the kids from the day they get there. They really do have a chance to win that race to maturity. They have a chance to totally master the technique and the how. And then I would say this too, like you're mentioning great players. Think about all the average guys that you guys thought about, God, this guy will never have a shot. And I'm thinking about a couple of them. I'm thinking about a couple of guys that I got to coach in 17 and 18 that ended up helping us win some games.
Yeah.
That people thought like this guy will never do it.
We know all about average guys. It's the brand of the podcast. So,
right.
No, you're right. There's a lot of guys who played on the same line as Tristan Wirfs. I think about that line. Something happened, an injury here, there, the whole.
You just talk about my guy Shooter. Like Shooter's my personal favorite player right now, and yeah, that's a dude who, if you ask me, when he walks in, a dude who shouldn't have played in the first place. From one dude who shouldn't have played to another dude who shouldn't have played, I would have said Shooter is not going to make it. And Shooter's one of the most gritty, get down bastards you got. And you can just rely on the kid every snap. And so I can fully take that to heart.
Yeah. And I do think the fact that, you guys know, you look over, okay, there's Coach Polasek in the old line doing tight reach again. Yep. God, man, wow, they're doing wide reach. Look at that drill. But, you know, it's like that batting practice, like Coach Ferentz calls it, every single day. And then, like, being smart enough to say we're not going to run a bunch of plays that don't correlate. You know, that's kind of the secret sauce. And then on top of that, I'm with the New York Jets assistant O-line coach, is our O-line coach here now at Wyoming, Derek Frazier. And we've been going through a bunch of stuff. And, like, I think schematically the pass protections – and the amount of man situations that you get put in at Iowa, the man-to-man opportunities, really helps those guys become pro prospects as well. Because they're looking at all full slide protections right now. The NFL scouts are RPOs, mushed up protections. And so like that part of it has become the most hard, difficult evaluation for NFL people. They don't see these guys pass set enough in one-on-one situations. And so I think the schematics and how we do things really translates well, or how Iowa does stuff really translates well to the National Football League as well.
100%. What makes KF special? You got to work with him every day. And we try to tell it as from a player's perspective. And I think we do a decent job, but you know, even on a deeper level, you get to be in on some of those staff meetings, be around him. We feel like he's just a different guy. Like he's so special and just different. How does that come across to you in your time at Iowa?
Well, I think players only know what they know, right? Like, and you guys didn't enter the portal and you didn't transfer. So you didn't see 9,000 different coaches. And you know, you guys aren't 12-year veterans that saw five different NFL coach. Okay. So I think that's one thing. But like, to me, I would break it down into four things. And I just took down a couple notes because I figured something like this would be coming, you know, his focus on each individual kid improving, I think is unique, you know, like I'd mentioned with the old line and he really tries to keep that pretty tight too. He's not asking everybody to be an All-American. He's just simply saying, you know, hey guys, we need to go out there, be competitive and be improvement driven on the basics, the how to do things. Okay. I think a consistent approach with that, I think as players, you guys feel that, you know, like I know there's fifth year seniors that are here. Wait for it. Here it comes. One more thing. He's going to, and then you're in a team meeting is guys, one last thing.
Love it.
And it's something that you heard and it's something that you've heard, you know, 5,000 times. That's important. He knows who he is and he knows who he wants the Iowa football program. It's a lot like, you know, sometimes the fans want all these different types of uniforms and helmets. And, hey, he wants us to – when you turn the game on, okay, University of Iowa is playing. The University of Iowa is out there playing, and it's easily identifiable. It sounds different, and they look like the University of Iowa. Okay, so I think that makes him cool and special and interesting. I think his approach in recruiting, call it old school or call it whatever you want, but Tyler Barnes is trying to keep everybody on the schedule, right? Right? Like, we got 15 meetings with KF. We got 10 meetings with Coach Polisek, and you're trying to get all these guys to feel really good about Iowa football. And the next thing you know, Coach Ferentz has run over 25 minutes in a recruiting meeting because he's sitting there with those folks and he genuinely wants to get to know them. Mm-hmm. And he's just having a conversation like three guys would be having at, you know, the bar. And that's just how he approaches it. And I think parents and kids really appreciate that. And then I really, really have respected looking back and being able to process some things. I there was never a time I walked past him in the hallway and I wasn't sure if he wanted to talk for a half hour or just say hi. Like, he had that way about him where you really felt a strong sense of caring from him. Yep. Like, Tim, yep. Is everything okay? Are you good today? You know, how's Jill doing? Are you guys doing all right? And then the next thing you know, you'd be in the hallway for 5 or 6 minutes. And you know he doesn't have the time for that. And I don't have the time for that. But he took the time to do those things. So those are the four things that I kind of gravitate towards. Just, you know, brilliant at the basics and compete and improve. Consistent approach with the players and coaches. You know, how he treated staff members. And then, like, I always talk about recruiting with him because he is a great recruiter. Now, he's not going to be on social media and doing all the things that you have to do to sign a five-star recruit, but he's gonna do a good job with the guys that we identify as the guys that we want in the program.
Yeah. The thing that stuck out as a player was, you know, he would just come up to you in a random lift. It's like 6:14 in the morning, and he walks by and he goes, "Hey, Kluve, how's your dad? How's your mom?" And I'm like, good. And he like stands there and he actually expects, like, if you want to have a conversation, he's going to give you, I swear to God, the guy has 100 hours in his day. I don't know how he finds time for everybody. And I also don't know how he remembers every single person's name from every staff and player's family. It is absolutely wild. And his mind is an absolute steel trap. It is unbelievable.
Well, you just, that point you made about him finding time, like he's got 100 hours in the day. We all know that's not true. But I guess the other thing, looking back, that I hope I can carry through my career is really nothing's that big a deal. But everything is. Like, there was never no one thing that would pull him away from a conversation with a player like that. And that's where, like, I struggle with if you don't know that man cares about you, then you're obviously just not listening or.
Yep.
Or totally open to understanding how much he cares.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That emotion he shows in the locker room.
Oh,
that's
like, yeah. And there's a lot of head coaches that don't do that, guys. But he fully understood what you guys had to go through in the week of preparation, how the assistants pushed you guys. And then that's what's coming out. Like, thank you.
It always felt like, when he would get emotional and the tears would start to come, you could see that he carried all of the pain, the sweat, the tears, the injuries, the hours. It's like he carried every single player's combined effort on his shoulders. And when it paid off, it paid off. And it just all came out. Oh my God. It's just it's like crack for a player. Right. Like, that is insane. So obviously you're on the way out now, but it's hard to imagine that a team goes through a more tumultuous offseason than Iowa did last year. COVID-19 was tough for every team and still is. But then you add in the racial disparity allegations, the Twitter, the social media blows up, Coach Doyle, this, that, the other thing. And everybody heard about my brother, I'm not even sure how much you've interacted with my brother. He probably doesn't say hi like a dumbass or anything.
A little bit.
Yeah. So we hear about the meeting that went down and how emotional and just crazy and like open. And my brother used the words life-changing, that meeting was. And without getting into the details we've discussed on this podcast, brought people on, yada, yada, that has to change your perspective as a coach, as a player, as a teammate, a father, this, that, the other. What did you take from this summer? And how does that change your approach moving forward as you communicate with guys, their families, those kinds of things?
Well, the first thing I would say is, you heard every individual. I don't care if it was a Twitter claim or what you're hearing behind the scenes or what's coming out. And you start to process like, oh my God, like as an individual coach, have I ever crossed the line or done something that a person could feel a certain way? And so for me, it was like, this is why the relationships are so important. You got to work at it. And that to some degree, and I'm going to expand upon this, was almost comforting. Like, okay, so to know that every individual in my room is getting coached the same way, I treat them the same way, I try to have the same relationship, you know, I just kind of remade that the focus for me. And then what I tried to do was like, how else can I help guys that aren't in my position group? How can I help them to make them feel, you know, comfortable? I know like Mike Daniels talked about, like everybody needs to feel like when they're in that building, they're truly at home. Like they got to be able to be themselves. It's home. And so I just kind of reflected on my experience as a coach and just said, I could do better getting to know some of the guys outside of the position group. The other thing that just stands out to me, two things. This isn't just an Iowa issue. This is a national issue.
For sure.
Got every program. I don't know how many coaches I know or how many coaches I've been on the phone with over the last year. Minimal 100. We're all dealing with this American issue. That's a huge problem. Okay. And for me, I just took away from it, like, you can't assume as an individual, and I would tell you three guys this, okay, don't assume that you know how anybody feels about that thunderstorm that rolls through last week, because their house could be all jacked up and you are perfectly fine 5 miles away. And so you just never know what any of these circumstances, these tragedies that happened in our country, you know, Minneapolis, right, kind of created this real, yep, real big attention grabbing deal for American issue. And so for me, I just look at it and say, hey, I'm not going to assume how anybody feels about this. You got to give that person the opportunity to talk through it. You got to give that person the opportunity to help educate me if they have knowledge about it. Ignorance, Kelton Copeland has been phenomenal for Iowa football over the last year. I'm just telling you, and I'm not there anymore, so I'll say it. Kelton Copeland has been unbelievable on this topic. Okay, he's taught me so much, and his approach is right. Because he still says individually it's got to come down to your attitude and your effort. Those things are going to dictate your opportunities. But by God, we got some issues. And he said this, ignorance, when people use that term, when I used that term in the past, I had no idea. It's a lack of education. And so to me, it's all about educating every person in the program, including the Midwest kids from Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, that aren't from these areas that have some of this real, you know, dynamic, explosive, you know, problems. Okay, you got to educate them that this stuff is real. Hearing the kids at Iowa and hearing the stories from other coaches at other programs, the things that they share, it's just unbelievable. You know, like once a certain individual gets pulled over and you just hand them your license and then they give it back to you. And then another individual that looks differently, okay, has to get out, put their hands on the hood, and they have to get searched, and then they can go back in the car. Okay, I've heard of this exercise that was done, half and half, the group white, half the group African-American. And the question was, raise your hand if you were taught how to deal with if the police pull you over? Half the group raised their hand. Half the group then. What's going on? What's going on here? Okay, guys, listen. The group that raised their hand was African-American. Okay, within that small moment in time, it was so clear to me that, you know, certain people, certain individuals in that room didn't have any understanding of what African-Americans have to deal with.
Had to be, I talked to a few of the coaches, KB called me, you know, talked on text message on a couple others, just said, hey, that had to be a wild time with guy. I mean, and at this time you're not, there's no, like you said, it happens so fast that you're still an Iowa Hawkeye at this point. It's not like you're not, Wyoming's not in the picture, everything. What was it like to corral the, you know, the troops and say, like, how it had to be galvanizing to some extent. And what was it like to just be a part of a staff that was like, okay, we're restarting. This is fresh. This is new. There was a sense of relief from the players is what they talked about in some interviews. And it had to feel like a fresh new start. And then with this past season, what did you see from those guys that went through such a tough, I mean, that was incredible to win six straight after the tough start that they had. I mean, this podcast, us three, you know, we're just the talking heads now. We're the noise that KF talks about. We said our shit about them and you guys the first couple weeks. We were a little confused at what was going on. The response was really incredible in the back half of the season. What do you think led to that?
Well, conversation, education gave everybody an opportunity, some insight on how each individual felt about it. I thought Coach Ferentz did a really good job of cultivating some opportunities in June and July to discuss where the program was at after 22 years. Mm-hmm. You know, and okay, what things are we doing that really don't need to be done anymore? What things can we adjust so that, you know, 18 and a 19-year-old kid feel more like they're at home? I thought he did a tremendous job getting on the phone with countless. I mean, the time he put in to get with former players to say, hey, what'd you like? What didn't you like? What can we do differently? You know, and then him bringing that information back, and I'm sure he didn't share all of it. But we just started to attack to develop an environment where each and every individual kid could feel like they could be themselves, their authentic selves. And I think overall, there were some guys that really needed that in order to be their best player they could be,
sure.
In order to be the best teammate they could be. And then I really saw some guys start to say, man, we can have fun doing this, you know, just in general. And it just, there was a bond there. Those two games will forever bother me because I think we were an 8-0 football team this year. But also very rewarding at the end of it all. And for me to get Wisconsin, you know, finally, like that was a big deal for me. But I'm not sure. Like we got back to doing things really well on the field. Mm-hmm. After those two losses, we stayed the course like we always do, right? Like we weren't going to have two losses define the season. But looking back on it all, I really feel like there was some true leadership that popped through that hadn't been there before from the player standpoint. And then I thought the guys that had been doing a good job with everything, you know, weight room, nutrition, all those things that really matter, they kind of opened their hearts up and they said, let's give this a shot. Let's see if we can be a better version of Iowa football than we were in 2019. And I think that helped. And there were several guys from the top down, from the coaching staff down, that just, we just started to get on this thing and it really helped. I hope that it can continue to show up down the road, you know, for them. Cause that's the number one thing with every program is we don't need a tragedy to happen to make sure that this topic or this issue within a football team kind of stays at the forefront.
Absolutely. It's good to hear. That's, you know, that's just good to hear from somebody that was there. And we believe that Iowa's in a good spot. Like you said, the people that are there right now, they care and they're moving in the right direction. I wonder if you have any good Ike Butker stories.
I do. I love Ike. Ike's going to be one of those unsung heroes that plays for 10 years. And that was probably, looking back on it, I mean, I don't think that fit into coaching Brian's plans to have the two seniors not be able to go at tackle.
Yeah.
You know, Boone and Ike. And we got this guy that's never coached the O-line before. And now we got AJ in there. And Sean Welch is out at right tackle. And Tristan wasn't quite, you know, like, so for me, I'll always be grateful and indebted to Ike. Just his reassurance, coach, you're doing a good job. Coach, because he was in the meeting still. He stayed connected with the guys.
Yep.
And like, coach, you're going to do good at this. Like, the way you approach it, how much you care about the young guys. This stinks because me and Ike never got to play golf together. We tried 4 or 5 times, but we stay in touch. And yep. I text yep. him. And not anything in particular. Probably just his great sense of humor. Like, I think he thought initially – like this guy, me and Brian are so different on the field. I think he probably thought, like, these guys were like, coach, you know, we take a knee once in a while. Like, for a knee, I said, we're on the grass, we're going to move. And I remember Ike being like, spraying his face with water and being like, holy smokes, I'm going to have a hard time holding my weight. And just that's kind of what I remember is his sense of humor.
He's such just a good guy, like just a ball of good energy.
But those O-line guys, all the O-line guys, I mean, like,
yeah.
That's just that group.
Yeah. How long is Tyler Linderbaum going to play in the NFL? Because it feels like potentially forever. That, I mean, he just is so solid and just feels like he knows what he's doing. Yeah. He's really good.
Yeah. He could have came out this year and just depending on, like, you know what? He's going to be at the top of the list for anybody that runs inside and outside zone from the center standpoint for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's interesting is, like, I'm just telling you guys, I wouldn't be shocked on December 18th. He sends out a message on social media, because that's what you kind of do, is say, I'm staying again. I love college football. I want to get a degree. I'll have time to be an NFL guy. Now, I don't know if it's going to be in his hands just because, you know, there's some expectations that he has. There's some goals that he can obtain next year that could be different than anybody else ever. And I really think, God, his spirit, his energy, his knowledge, his grit, he is so freaking tough and prideful. And then on top of that, he's talented. I mean, I told the guy, my O-line coach here, our O-line coach, and I think he's been on the phone with all his buddies saying, you guys better get this guy. Better take him next year. You know, the sky's the limit, but you got to stay healthy. You know, you got to play well. You need the guys around you to play well. And I think that whole inside group, not to take anything away from Tyler, but I will take the opportunity to say, man, how good of a job did Cody Entz do? How good of a job did Shooter do? How good of a season did Cole Banward have?
They were good.
Right. And then you got this guy, Justin Britt. I'm just telling you guys, he's on the cusp. And then Tyler Ellsbury, Mason Richmond can play inside. They've got some real competition inside, where I felt like maybe we were trying to always patch it up those first couple of years. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some real depth there.
That's awesome.
As Coach Wallace would say, you got some dudes now.
Yeah, you got some fucking dudes. So now you're, as Drake would say, you're out with the Wyoming Broncos, the Cowboys.
The Cowboys, bro. Like, I knew who fucking Wyoming was. We beat them once. Yeah. You know, Polisic was there on the good side. Now he's on the other side. But, hey, we don't hate him for it.
How many years until the Cowboys are conference champions out there with you, you know, leading the offense? I mean, what are the goals here? Where does Tim Polisic go from here?
No, that's the goal. The goal is to improve on what we've done in the past. In 2019, we had a real opportunity to a 4th-and-1 opportunity and then a field goal to beat Boise State, and it ended up not going so well. just being around the guys, I really like the makeup of the guys. We got some real ability outside. Running back has led the league in rushing the last 2 years. I think the pieces are here. I think we have a real clear vision like Iowa. You know, we want to be a tough, physical, and smart football team that plays good defense. And we just have to do our part on offense to be more explosive. I want to get more guys involved in the run game, that meaning receivers, you know, on the jet sweeps and so forth and so on. But I think we have some work to do in the pass game, not only from the quarterback spot, conceptually from a system standpoint, but we got to do a better job up front getting our hands on people and stopping people in pass pro. And so I think the future is bright. Like, we really do understand who we are, and we have a really concise, clear plan in recruiting. We're not real interested in being out in front of everybody. We kind of want to do what Iowa did for years, find that George Kittle as a senior, you know, find that guy, that Dallas Clark as a senior. Not that we're going to get those kind of guys, but my point is, you know, look at some senior film and continue to recruit guys throughout so they can fit into our culture, because we want to coach them hard and we want to help those guys reach their potential. And you know, I'm excited. I'm excited to lead, and I'm excited to help young coaches and other offensive coaches to learn and grow. You know, I really look forward to that. And I'm pumped, man. I it was hard to leave Iowa because of the kids, the staff, and what I thought we could really have 4 or 5 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just, those kids in the 21, in the 20 recruiting class, and we were off to a good start in 22. That was really difficult, but I just couldn't get over the fact, money aside, Big Ten aside, the opportunity to lead a unit. You know, I think that, like, I just watched you defensive guys, you know, Kevin, come out of that room on Wednesday, on Friday nights after Phil has gone ballistic, and you guys having a, you know, like this look on your eyes, like, we're going to hit these guys. Yep. You know, so I look forward to being the guy in front on a Friday night, you know, flipping a table or two, or, you know, having a little bit of fire behind it.
I love it. I love it. We know you
need a video. I need a fly on the wall video of you flipping tables in team meetings, because that's the type of team meeting I would lead. And I can promise you that this podcast is now some Wyoming Stallions fans, because we got to keep up with our guy.
Yeah,
I tried
to flip one in 14 at the national title, and the damn thing was bolted down. I almost blew my biceps tendon. And Joe Haig told that story to Tristan.
Oh, boy.
You know, he's the extra tight end that comes in for Tampa.
Yeah.
He was a walk-on at North Dakota State.
Oh, I love
it. And him and Tristan have created a relationship. So it's all good, man.
So bringing up Phil, what was it like to scheme against him in 16, scheme against the Iowa defense in general?
Well, you know, you just knew it was going to be such a challenge, actually physically blocking people or trying to move them off their spots. Now, the one thing I don't want to give too much away again, because, like, the one thing, and Phil knows, I've shared, he, you know, we sat down for 2 hours. It just, you knew Iowa was going to kind of do what Iowa does. And so really the challenge was keeping all three of those guys that were 6'5" plus, keeping their hands down in the pass pro, because they did such a good job of batting balls. You know, if they recognize quick protection, just being so well coached up front in the back end, you knew you're going to have to earn everything. I just remember, like, thinking, okay, if we could hit a couple of these specialty schemed up things, maybe we would have a chance.
I remember two of those plays in particular. Yeah.
Yeah, where we pulled somebody opposite, or
yeah. The, you know, damn influence pulls where you're pulling the guard away from the goddamn play completely fucked us up one time.
Yeah.
And then I told
Phil, I said, you know, you guys were almost to a fault too good. Like, I mean, too disciplined.
You found it. It's like you found out what we were keying on, and you know that we played our keys. And so if our key told us to go that way, we were fucking going that way.
Kevin's good still job.
Kudos to you there.
Kevin's still pissed about it.
I'm still pissed about it, because I think we gave him like 160 yards of rushing that game or something like that.
Yeah, I wasn't happy.
I threw a temper tantrum and destroyed my bedroom door after that. Yeah. After that fateful day.
Yeah, coach, he punched holes in his bedroom door in our house that day after we lost y'all. So that's Drake for you. We're so thankful that you gave us this time, Coach. And after listening to this, I hope that no recruits listen, because I'm worried they might sway to Wyoming instead of Iowa now.
Yeah, right.
That energy will swing them out west.
Yeah, I tried to reach out to Linderbaum, and joking. So get in the portal.
Tell him to hit the portal.
Get in the portal.
Dude, the mountains are great out here. The summers aren't as hot. Hit the portal.
It snows in June once in a while. It's a great place.
Thank you so much. We were fortunate to have, you know, some time with you in 17. Obviously, we wish we could add more, and more fortunate now to get you on the show and talk about all things Hawkeyes and football. So thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you guys having me. Don't be strangers. You know, you never know where the business leads, and we'll see what happens down the road, right?
Absolutely. Episode 195 of the podcast with Coach Polasek. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next time. Peace.
I'm MJ Acosta-Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts, and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.